This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Julia Jacobs. Water is life, as they say, and fresh water is necessary for the survival of all living organisms on Earth, but it's also a resource under threat. Only 3% of water on the planet is fresh water, and only about 1% of that is readily available for human use. So World Water Day is celebrated annually on the 22nd of March, and in conjunction with this, I speak to Norizan Muhammad Mazlan. She's the head of conservation in Peninsula Malaysia, and Datin Daria Matthew, the freshwater lead for Klang Valley and Sithiu Wetlands, who are both from WWF Malaysia. Welcome, ladies. How are you today?
Fine, thank you.
How are you?
Very well. Thank you so much for joining us today. So, World Water Day. So, we just celebrated it on the 22nd of March. And, you know, it's one of the few times in the year where, as I mentioned earlier, one of our most vital resources gets some attention. What would you say is one of the most important things for the world to consider on World Water Day?
Well, one of the things that we would like to remind people about, especially in Malaysia, is that water doesn't come from the tap.
Common misconception right there.
Well, it's easy for people to do that because especially in an urban setting, even in a rural setting nowadays, we take it for granted because it's so easy to get water.
Yeah.
Water actually goes through a really arduous journey first before it gets to our taps. It starts in the rainfall, of course, and falls into our water catchment areas up in the highlands, travels all the way down. And it's highly important in Malaysia, these areas, because 92% of our fresh water actually comes and originates from these streams and rivers that mm-hmm. trickle down and start in the central forest pine that we have in our forested water catchments.
Yeah.
Only probably the state of Kelantan actually is excluded because a significant percentage of its raw water comes from groundwater.
Okay.
Actually.
And for someone who doesn't understand what groundwater means, how would you explain that to them?
Well, groundwater is actually water that is found naturally in the ground because the ground is porous.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of water that's actually found in the ground also depends on the soil type. And also the amount of rainfall that you get, as well as the land use that's on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of contributing factors. I might have mentioned the most important ones, but there are others as well.
Of course, yeah. And sorry, did you have anything to add to that, Daria?
Yes, just to draw the attention to this year's World Water Day theme for this year.
Yep.
The theme this year is Nature for Water,
mm-hmm.
exploring nature-based solutions to the water challenges we face in the 21st century.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is actually a great opportunity because, you know, through this theme, we'll be able to actually make a very strong connection between nature, the environment, and water.
Mm-hmm.
And we also want to try and create awareness about the importance of nature-based solutions. And this is particularly very relevant and a very important thing for decision makers, policy makers, even people on the street to actually understand how we prepare ourselves to face all the negative adverse changes that lies ahead of us with changes in our climate condition.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so nature does provide, you know, as green infrastructure, provide solutions to actually help mitigate, you know, all the negative impacts with changes in the climate.
Mm-hmm. And maybe you could explain some of these nature-based solutions that exist.
Essentially, when we look around us, you know, the forest itself, forest within the catchment area, that is actually part of what we call green infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
The wetlands, you know, the rivers itself,
mm-hmm.
you know, these are all very important elements within our water cycle.
Yeah. Trees in the forest, of course.
Trees, yes, yeah. So if we keep them intact, we manage them properly, we safeguard our water resources.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about, you know, all the other ecosystem services they can provide besides providing us, you know, important source of water. And particularly if we look in the context of Malaysia, where, you know, about 97% of our water supply actually comes from surface water,
yeah.
delivered through rivers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's not from the taps, as you said.
Not from the taps, yeah.
There's a lot more to it. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. And with climate change, you know, we also expect, and this is already becoming evident in many places, even in Malaysia we're seeing this, we're beginning to experience adverse weather conditions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, months when we thought, you know, should be wet are now, you know, very dry.
Sure,
we get
yeah.
prolonged months of, you know, without rain. and times when, you know, it shouldn't be raining, we get lots of floods. So, you know, this what we term as green infrastructure, if we invest in this, what it means is we keep them intact. We don't
disrupt.
Or we keep them or protect them, conserve these natural places. It's cheaper in the long run than us having to invest on hard infrastructure. You know, building more dams, for example, to hold excess water, or building dams to store water for water supply in case, you know, we have droughts. So this is the attention that the theme is, the World Water Day this year is trying to, you know, get people to think about.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because, you know, a lot of people say that our problems will be solved by technology. But there are so many, obviously, activists who say that you should just look at nature. All the solutions are there. Everything was fine until we came along and messed it up. And, you know, so technology doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, there's a solution for everything. We should actually look back to what we already had, right? And, you know, it's interesting that you point out water doesn't just come from the taps, you know, and I think Malaysians take it for granted, you know, right until the point where their water is cut, like we just saw in what happened in, you know, in Selangor, so many people got their water cut. What do you think about that? You know, do you think Malaysians are taking, you know, water for granted?
Unfortunately, the answer is a resounding yes. I mean, can you blame us? There's a lot of rainfall. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have on average 3,000 millimetres of rainfall every year. That's a lot compared to other countries like the UK, I think. We only have about 200 to 300, yeah. You know, 10 times less. And we tend to assume as Malaysians that because we have this rainfall, there is an abundance of water and we shouldn't have droughts. It's not true. And we have to remember that on average, our per capita household water consumption actually is about 209 litres per person per day. Whereas if you look at our neighbours' per capita household water consumption, it's only 143 litres
wow.
per person per
day.
That's
a lot.
They reduced it drastically, actually. Mm-hmm. They were at 165 in 2003, back in 2003. Now they are at 143. So their target is to lower it by to 140 litres per person per day by 2030. So as a nation, we are concerned about fulfilling our ever-increasing water demand, ensuring there is enough water to satisfy our current and also future needs. And our population is ever increasing. The growth rate is about 1.3%. Currently, we stand at about an estimated 32 million. Mm-hmm. So our needs will always keep growing. And hence, we also need water infrastructure to cater to those needs. But what's actually missing from this picture is the demand management side, where other countries actually that have had a lot of problems with scarcity of water, they've already been practicing this for years. So things like hose pipe bans. So you basically that means that you can't water your garden during the summer months. Yeah. So that's something that maybe Malaysia should also start on. And in Malaysia, actually, if you look at the statistics on this, the National Water Resources Commission website, which is SPAN, known as SPAN, the domestic consumer is actually, it forms the largest consumer of water in Malaysia, if you compare it even to the industries. So there is the conundrum where actually every person and every individual could make a change. Mm-hmm. Maybe just by switching off your tap when you're brushing your teeth, or, you know, washing your cars a little less frequently during the week. But collectively, we could actually make a big difference. So that's where it's not a one-size-fits-all. You have to look at, you know, who uses it, where it's used the most. There are larger user groups, especially in the industries. Mm-hmm. But if you look at it as a whole, it's actually the domestic side that's using a lot. So we need to actually have a change in perception of our water availability. Yeah. Because even though we might have abundant rainfall, sometimes people don't understand this when we say this, but it's not falling in the right place.
Exactly. It's not falling in the catchment areas.
In the catchment areas. Right? Yeah. And with a heat island effect as well and climate change effects, just like what Daria already mentioned, mm-hmm. it might be more erratic. That's why. And droughts and floods are actually very interrelated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Maybe you'd like to elaborate on that point, you know, how exactly, you know, are they interrelated?
Okay, so for example, when you look at land use in the catchment areas, the natural resources that we already have, like forested catchment areas, they play a role. Even the quality of the forest plays a role in the absorption and the storage of the water in the soil as well as in the trees. Mm-hmm. If we actually change that, that whole system, and there is incompatible land use, it might actually result in more surface runoff. The water, that means that the water that falls from the sky actually falls straight into the rivers at a very high speed and could cause flash floods, for example. Whereas if it's actually intact natural forest, you have more of a buffer. You slow down. Basically, the key is in slowing down the velocity of the water. And that's not just in the highlands, even in the lowlands. And as we know, I think in the lowlands, land use, most of it is saved up for development or maybe agriculture. But the lowland forests are actually the greatest sponges of water, the riparian areas, the wetlands as well. So they all satisfy this function of releasing and absorbing water, mm-hmm. and they act as buffer to any storm events. So that's why you see if we actually change the land use yeah. in certain very critical areas, because you can actually do some modelling to find out which are the critical areas, then we might see changes and much more severe mm-hmm. storm events or even droughts.
Droughts, yeah. I mean, because I've spoken before to other activists who are working in places where there's illegal logging and deforestation happening. And, you know, they tell me how, because areas where the trees have been cut a lot, you know, suddenly when there's rain, there's floods, you know. The water, of course, they call it, is turned into a tetarik colour, they say. And, you know, the Orang Asli communities who are actually living there, they get the immediate effect, you know, and then slowly it kind of trickles down to the rest of us. But, you know, in effect, everyone is going to be affected by this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so less deforestation, I guess. I'm speaking today to Nurizan Muhammad Mazlan. She's the head of conservation in Peninsula Malaysia, and Datin Daria Matthew, the freshwater lead for Klang Valley and Sethu Wetlands. They're both from WWF Malaysia. And we are talking about water and, you know, it's the most important resource, quite frankly, and it's also under threat. And it was World Water Day last week, so we're kind of going along the theme of finding nature-based solutions to face the water challenges in the 21st century. We'll continue this discussion after this quick break. You are listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. In the studio with me today are two very lovely ladies from WWF Malaysia. Nurizan Muhammad Mazlan, she's the head of conservation in Peninsula Malaysia, and Datin Daria Matthew, she's the freshwater lead for Klang Valley and Sethu Wetlands. And we are discussing water in conjunction with World Water Day, which was just celebrated on the 22nd of March. So, I mean, before the break, we were talking about, you know, how Malaysians take water for granted. So, and we were also talking about things like floods and droughts and the connection to that. I'm interested in climate change, actually, and how that will come to impact our water resources, because I think some people don't even believe that climate change is happening. So how would you kind of, you know, respond to such comments? Maybe we can start with you, Daria.
Yes. So climate change means there will be changes as well in terms of the rainfall that we get. So the impact will be, you know, both in terms of timing as well as spatially in terms of space, mm-hmm. you know, where the water will fall, the rainfall will fall. So projections have been made, and these are all, you know, very scientifically based evidence that have emerged from studies that have been done by scientists, not just in Malaysia, but, you know, everywhere else globally. Within the country, we have organizations like the National Hydraulic Institute of Malaysia, which is also the focal point for the country looking at issues related to climate change. They are a research-based organization, and they've done studies where they look at projections, you know, and, you know, over maybe 10 years or 50 years from now, what would be the scenario in Malaysia in terms of, you know, rain, period of droughts, mm-hmm. as well as flooding.
Okay.
And it does show that places which now are getting rain most likely will be getting less rain in future. So this has an impact in terms of our water management.
Sure.
And also where our water infrastructure has been placed. We have water supply dams that have been built. Some of these dams were built many years ago. At that time, the topic of climate change was not, you know, unheard of. You know, nobody talked about it.
Yeah.
And so when the design of the infrastructure was done at that time, the climate change changes that brought about by climate change was never factored in the design.
Right. Yeah.
So we may end up with dams which are dry. You know, this is just scenario that we can expect in future. Mm-hmm. So big investment that has gone in to have this infrastructure to help ensure we get our water resources, yeah. our water supply, may be rendered ineffective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. The studies are also showing that you know, in certain states, a lot of rain will not fall in the inland areas anymore. Not in the upper catchment.
Right.
Instead, you know, more rain will be happening, you know, closer to the coastal area. So we won't be able to capture water, you know, in our dams.
Mm-hmm.
This could be one potential result. And we may expect higher incidences of flooding in the lowlands. Yeah, so, you
really
know.
A scary picture.
Yeah, these are all the possibilities that may happen.
Yeah, and I don't know if you ladies remember in 2014 where there was a lot of water cuts in the Klang Valley especially. I remember because I was not working at the time and I was at home with no water. And there was rainfall, but again, the rain wasn't falling in the right water catchment areas and, you know, everything was dropping. And people, I guess, don't think about it until it happens to them, isn't it? So we need to keep reminding them that this might be a possibility. So both of you actually have been working on water issues for a while now, I think. And over the course of your careers, what have you seen that's actually worked to kind of solve water issues? What about you, Norizan? Maybe you can start.
Well, there's no one-size-fits-all solution.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you look at it as a nation, and then you go to a smaller resolution and look at it by state, and even to the river basin, especially, to that level, that's where the solutions and also the problems lie. It's not just about water provisioning. It's also about water regulation, so both floods and droughts.
Mm-hmm.
And then, on top of that, is the exacerbation of the availability of good water, where one of the things that contributes to is the water quality,
mm-hmm.
the raw water quality itself. I think you mentioned back in 2014, right? There
yes.
was the water shortage, serious water shortage for about 2 to 3 months.
It was agony, yes.
In February, I think.
Yes, that's right.
And actually, I mean, part of the problem was also the pollution
yeah.
of the waterways that was happening. And it was exacerbated by the low flows. So you didn't get enough dilution of the contaminant in the water. And hence, our water treatment plants, even though they are robust, but they are, you know, technological things made by man, so they have their limitations. So once you actually go over the threshold of the limitation, then the treatment plant is rendered ineffective. So even though it might mean just one water quality parameter, say maybe ammonia, that is elevated levels, if you actually still pass it through the water treatment plant, because of its highly elevated levels and because of the inability of the water treatment plant to cope and to remove it, then it could pose a threat to the health of the people yeah. actually receiving the water.
Right.
So there are a lot of things that need to be taken into consideration. You know, the natural infrastructure has to work together with the hard infrastructure. And we also have to remember that nature provides things for free, and water is a renewable source. But there is a caveat to it where we actually have to protect and conserve the ecosystems as they are
mm-hmm.
in order to maximize the returns from it, just like, I guess, any other economic or return on investment that you make. But you'll find that when you actually invest in nature, you not only get the provisioning of the water and regulation of the water, you might get also other fringe benefits. So, for example, a fisherman would also benefit from improved water quality because maybe the sensitive species of fish will return.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an example. Maybe even for a farmer, say the harvest, if he's very dependent on rainfall, then the harvest that he will get is actually better. So I guess a cost-benefit analysis in terms of what we need to do for both soft and hard infrastructure.
Sure.
But that all involves capital and a lot of studies. I think the main thing that we need to remember here is that every individual actually can make a change by choosing to live sustainably, mm-hmm. Making the right choices, having good habits, conserving everywhere they can. And like I said before, the domestic side in Malaysia is the highest user. So we must not forget that we have a responsibility as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything you wanted to add to that, Daria?
Yeah. Maybe it's also important for us to see steps that have been taken by various players in the water sector. And when we talk about water, we shouldn't limit our consideration to just water that goes into our water supply system. It actually has, we have to look at the bigger picture. We cannot disconnect water that we receive in our homes or in our office, in our workplace, from the forest where the river originates from.
Yeah.
So really, we have to look at everything in an integrated way. And we have seen some positive steps that have been taken. For example, over the years, we have seen institutional arrangements being introduced. We now have dedicated ministries, for example, the Ministry of Natural Resources and Environment. So this is the ministry that oversees issues related to management of rivers, management of forest. We also have another dedicated ministry which looks at the water industry, issues like water treatment, water supply, distribution, even wastewater treatment.
Right.
You know?
Very important.
Yeah. So these are very important steps, I think. I mean, surely a lot of challenges still lies ahead of us.
Mm-hmm.
But, we are already making steps and, these are positive steps. In terms of law, we also have seen the Water Services and Industry Act in 2006, which looks into regulating water supply services and sewerage services, and also integrated river basin management plans.
Mm-hmm.
This is an approach that has been spearheaded in other developing countries, I guess simply because they have seen the problems earlier than us.
Okay.
Yeah. So now Malaysia is also getting on board to look at integrated approaches. And we do know that a lot of our river basins in the country, plans such as the Integrated River Basin Management Plans have been developed, have been formulated, and the plans looks at aspects of protection, conservation, look at coordination, look at development, in a holistic way.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also recognized in the Malaysia, in our Malaysia plan, 5-year Malaysia plan,
yeah.
The National Special Plan, and these approaches are recognized. But again, we should not forget, as consumers, members of the public should remember that, the responsibility doesn't lie with the government alone.
For sure.
Or with organizations
like you
NGOs,
guys.
Yeah. or even the universities, each individual in the country actually has a role to play.
Mm-hmm.
And if we all do our little parts, collectively, we can make very big changes.
Yeah. And then that is something I think that influences a lot of the work that you guys do at WWF. So how do you actually go about, providing education materials, for example, for the many different communities in Malaysia? How do you get that message out there?
Well, we do organize quite a few educational and awareness events. In Klang Valley, for example, we have actually held the Water Quest for about 3 years in a row now.
Mm-hmm.
That actually, we have modules where it's a kind of a treasure hunt thing usually. And it's open to the public where they can win prizes, but they have to do their homework on water conservation. So we'll ask things, for example, like rainwater harvesting, how do you do it? Can you draw a sketch of it? All geared towards improving the understanding of the general public on what they can do themselves, and mm-hmm. also increase their general knowledge on what the water organizations are in Malaysia as well, because there are a lot of them. And some actually have overlapping jurisdictions,
sure.
But then I won't go into the detail of that. We're also embarking on this new Journey of Water event. It's new in Malaysia, first time ever, but it was actually already conducted in Zambia and South Africa previously. So the Journey of Water, basically the logo is water does not come from a tap. So it's
very effective, yeah.
So it's actually going through the entire journey of water from the forested water catchment areas in the highlands down to the actual storage area, so a dam, mm-hmm. And then onto the water treatment plant, where it's going to cover what contributing factors there are that actually are needed, the raw water quality, the mm-hmm. amount of water as well that is provisioned in order for it to be treated to be available for use. So once it's treated in the water treatment plant, it becomes potable. Basically, it's drinkable.
Drinkable, yeah.
Yeah. After that, then we use it, and then what happens to it then? It goes into our toilets, into our sinks. Of course, then there is the matter of sewage treatment and wastewater treatment as well. And then after that, we also look at how along the journey of water, along the river, how different communities have different initiatives to actually safeguard or conserve the areas that are important to them. Because there are some communities that are abstracting directly from the rivers.
Yeah.
You know, through gravity feed systems, there are numerous ones all over the peninsula and as well as Sabah and Sarawak. And then we're also looking at biodiversity in the river system, and also the importance of maintaining the riparian vegetation and the land use that is compatible to actually maintain the ecosystem services that we so desperately need in our daily lives. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit of a brief about the journey of water. Mm-hmm. And what's special about it is that we're doing it through social media.
Okay.
Mostly.
Okay.
We have Water Heroes, and we're collaborating for the first time with more than 10 relevant water-related agencies.
Oh, wonderful. I was just about to ask, you know, how do you guys actually collaborate? But yes, please tell me.
So we're actually working with quite a number. I'll try to name all of them. So we're working with the Forestry Department, mm-hmm. state, and also at the federal level, mm-hmm. Department of Fisheries, because we're actually having checkpoints. The journey of water is over 3 days, and we're stopping at these different checkpoints so that the water heroes and the general public that learn from the tweets and also from the information that is spread through social media by these water heroes about the journey.
Okay.
I keep saying the journey.
It is a journey.
It is a journey.
Yeah. An important one, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So on top of that, we're also working with the National Water Resources Commission, SPAN, AIR Selangor, mm-hmm. as the main operator for the water treatment plant that we're visiting, as well as the Selangor Dam. Mm-hmm. We're also working with the Majlis Daerah Hulu Selangor and Majlis Daerah Kuala Selangor. River of Life projects, so sure. communities that have actually those initiatives. We're also looking at going to the Klang River Basin and hopefully at the Blue Pond, because we want to showcase what the government also has done in terms of that. Oh, and also not to forget the sewage treatment plant in Pantai under IWK. Mm-hmm. So all the most important steps along the way for the journey of water.
Okay, and people can participate in this? This is something that's for everybody?
They can follow us on social media.
Okay.
Yes, we do have a dedicated number of water heroes
sure.
that will follow us throughout the 3 days.
Okay. When is this happening again, sorry?
That's going to happen from the 21st of April until the 23rd.
Okay, all right. So I guess we can go to WWF's social media pages to find out more about that. Yes. Water heroes? I mean, I just want... What are water heroes? Who are the water heroes?
Water hero. No, but specific to the journey of water, mm-hmm. there are about 30 of us, 10 of whom are from the Royal Bank of Canada, mm-hmm. as they are supporting this event outright. Okay. And then we have another 4 to 5 social media influencers. We have yet to determine the exact people that
sure.
we're getting.
Sure.
And then, of course, 2 water experts, our own staff as well,
okay.
And the media.
Okay. All right. And, you know, just if you both, you know, were put in that position of power where you could make that decision that, you know, that would positively impact water security in Malaysia, what would it be and why? Maybe we can start with you, Daria.
Right.
You are queen of water now. You are the...
Yes. This is a very unpopular topic, but yeah. I think it merits attention. If I can expand from what Narizan had said earlier, in response to your question about, you know, do we think Malaysians take water for granted? Mm-hmm. one contributing factor to that? And the answer is yes. We are seeing a lot of evidence that Malaysians are very wasteful. Statistics are showing that too. And one of the contributing factors, in our view, is due to the water tariff. It's unpopular because, you know, it could be a burden to a lot of people. But I think with some kind of innovative charging, perhaps, you know, we will be able to actually send across the message that water is a finite resource, it's very important, but it's very limited as well. So the tariff could be a mechanism. It's an important mechanism as well as effective mechanism. We have seen this happening in other countries to actually get people to be more responsible, more careful with the way they use water. We have to benchmark ourselves with other countries. You know, we don't have to go very far. We can look in the region. And, you know, if I can just use the example of Singapore, because they have shown remarkable improvement in terms of their water consumption over a very short period. One of the strategies that was undertaken was, you know, using the water tariff. And in Singapore, they actually captured the full cost of what it takes to get water from the source, from nature, to the people. So it's not just the treatment, it's also the cost for supplying, it's the cost for managing all the network of pipelines that needs to deliver water to the consumers, even the operation of the reservoirs. All these have been factored in. And on top of that, in Singapore, they also have what they call water conservation tax. Again, tax is not a very popular word, you know, it's important. I think if we're able to internalize and get people to understand, you know, why we actually have to also bring in, you know, the angle of conservation within the tariff system, I think, you know, a lot of people will actually be more appreciative of water. And because when we compare water with other utilities, for example, electricity, you know, it's...
I was just about to say, it's
way, you know, higher than, you know, when you compare with price of water. And we see how people tend to be more careful in terms of the electricity use. They could really feel the pinch, you know, and they have to pay their water bill every month. Yeah, so I guess, you know, I would actually call for attention to be given to relook, you know, the water tariff. And the other aspect would be, I guess, to call all Malaysians and myself included for us to not think about water and, you know, and be very grateful for water only when we have a crisis. And so we shouldn't complain when there's a crisis, and then when things are back to normal and, you know, we don't feel any difficulty, we forget. So I think we need to always keep that in mind and actually make it a day-to-day habit to actually be careful, be responsible, and to know, you know, how do we basically to practice sustainable water consumption at home and everywhere.
Because they're very simple steps, right? I mean, you don't have to wash your car five times a week. You don't have to. You can conserve rainwater for, you know, for cleaning your outside of your house, for example. There are simple, simple things that we can all do, you know, just to kind of conserve water on a very, very personal level, right? Narizan, sorry, did you have anything to add to that? If you were boss of the water, water boss.
I think if we look back to Singapore again, I think they've been very effective. One of the reason is because they actually have a key water institution there. Although we can't compare apple to oranges, you know, but still they do have this the political will, because their key water institution has that comprehensive responsibility for all water-related affairs. And they basically formulate the National Water Resource Development Strategy with very clearly defined tasks and timeframes, and it gets the full support of the government. Also, they also look at integrated land use planning and very strict implementation and enforcement of regulations. as well as, I guess, combined with a very well-educated population as well. So these are all the right ingredients in order for, you know, water security to be a reality in such a small island that hardly has any water catchment areas. So yeah. I think if they can do it, definitely we could do it too.
Okay, all right. So, I mean, this World Water Day, what message would you like to leave for everybody who's listening?
Use water wisely. Get out there, have a look at the condition of your river, understand where it originates from, and actually remember that we don't inherit the world from our ancestors, we actually borrow it from our children.
Yeah. Very true, very true. What about you, Daria?
Right. I guess I would actually call all Malaysians to take action, not to wait for other people to do it, but, you know, start today. Mm-hmm. There are very simple ways, as you have said just now, and anyone can do it. And always remember to connect ourselves to our source of water and, you know, to nature around us, because they're all elements that provides water for us.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, ladies. I've been speaking to Norizan Mohamad Mazlan. She's the head of conservation in Peninsula Malaysia. And Datin Daria Matthew. She's the freshwater lead for Klang Valley and Setio Wetlands. And both the ladies are from WWF Malaysia. And we were discussing, well, how we need to conserve water in conjunction with World Water Day 2018. If you'd like to keep in touch with, you know, WWF Malaysia and find out more about the work that they do, you can follow them on their Facebook page, which is WWF-Malaysia. And if you miss any part of this interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, you can search for the podcast on our BFM app, which is available on Google Play and the App Store. Thank you again, ladies, and happy World Water Day to us all.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.